Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's about that time of the week where we do interviews. And joining us now, my man, the best college football writer in America. Check him out at SBNation.com. And is the Banner Society? I got that right?
Banner Society, the new venture. Thanks for including it.
Yes, BannerSociety.com. My man, Spencer Hall. What's going on, man?
Oh, you're looking at it. It's Thursday. There's actual football happening tonight. And I don't know if you listen to this on Saturday, there's going to be actual football happening then. It's not going to be clean football. I'm just going to go ahead and warn you. If you judge by Florida, Miami, the goods, they need a little more time in the oven. All right? Don't take it out. The FDA does not recommend that because the temperature has not risen to that which would prevent football food poisoning, i.e. turnovers, sloppy play, etc. But you know what? We're all fat kids. We're going to eat the cookie dough.
Right, we got Clemson and Georgia Tech. And first of all, you talk about things being sloppy. I'm trying to imagine what will be more sloppy than the first Georgia Tech game coming off of 11 years of the triple option.
What could go wrong with that?
Oh, man. Like, do they have enough big dudes to do this?
I want to see, we actually missed the real spectacle, because what's going to happen tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern on the ACC Network, by the way. Dang,
oh!
I want a dollar for that instantly. But what you're going to see isn't actually the event. You're just going to watch some bad kind of sloppy football. The real spectacle had to happen like 2 or 3 months ago at the training table for the O-linemen in this offense, because they got to get bigger. And they had to get bigger like 3 months ago. So I'm just thinking this had to be like, you know, when they make foie gras and they force feed a goose, right? And they just sort of put like a funnel in its mouth and just stuff it. It just has to be that, but with like protein shakes and like whole fats.
And keep in mind that this generally happens with linemen anyway. Like, I saw this really sad story about Florida State during the Jimbo era, like when that got going, and they had one of these woman who worked at Florida State wrote something, and she said how sad it was that she talked to one of those players, and I just imagine him with the super country's voice saying, "Sometimes I'm just not hungry."
No, this you don't understand. If you haven't hung out with offensive linemen, right, and you don't understand what 300 pounds actually means, it's hard to keep that weight for most people to stay at 300 pounds. Michigan's linemen back in the 90s under Lloyd Carr, you know what that nutritional plan was for linemen who were slightly underweight? And by the way, underweight in the Big Ten at that point was anything below 285 or 290. The nutritional plan for them was, before you go to sleep, eat a whole pizza. I want you to think about that. I know some of you have done some damage at the buffets and parlors of your environs when it comes to pizza, okay? But I want you to think about a whole, heavy, large pizza that you eat right before dinner. Oh, I'd enjoy that. No, go try it. It's like trying to swallow a basketball and keep it down.
And this is what we ask of them. And with Georgia Tech, I think for people who don't quite understand the mechanics of the triple option offense, they were looking more for offensive linemen in like the 260, maybe 270 range, right? And by the way, he figured out quick, okay, I'm going to have to like adjust on this. This will not work consistently in the ACC. But those guys they had there before were there to be smaller and quicker than what they're going to be asked to do now, which means they're just going to have to eat a lot of food.
Yeah, no, they're going to have to eat a lot of food. They're going to have to be bigger boys than the big boys they already are. Fortunately, they're in Atlanta. And you know what? The delivery's good. The food's naturally sort of designed to put you to a fine 15 to 20-pound bloat at cruising weight. So, you know, if Georgia Tech has one for them in this, it's low expectations. If they have another, it's calorically dense food.
I'm actually curious to see, and somehow this turned into a Georgia Tech preview. I am curious to see, though, how long this goes under the new regime, because part of the reason why they went with Paul Johnson was our guys have to take calculus. It's hard to put together a championship college football team of guys that need to take calculus. Therefore, we need to find what is more plentiful in the sample, which is quarterbacks who can run and can't throw, and then we'll go from there.
I mean, it wasn't a bad idea, and actually, you know,
it went well.
Given the rest of Georgia Tech's history, above average performance, right? Like punch and weight. Really, the time it started to cave in was when Georgia really turned on recruiting. I say that, by the way, because to this point, Georgia really hasn't won that much, right? But in-state, once they turned on recruiting and it became apparent that Paul Johnson was never going to change. By the way, if you didn't figure this out, football coaches really don't change. I know like two football coaches who have ever changed. One is Pete Carroll, who changed everything he did when he went to USC. And two is Steve Spurrier. And I really maintain that Steve Spurrier just hated losing so much that he started running the ball more. That's it. He didn't actually want to change. He hated it. But he hated losing so much that he was willing to like run with quarterbacks like Connor Shaw at South Carolina, because really, how else are you going to get anything done at South Carolina than by compromising your very moral fiber as a football coach?
But I think that part of what's interesting with Johnson is no Paul Johnson was going to change. That's the point. You don't hire a dude running the triple option in 2008 and then be like, all right, so you're going to flip this up?
That's why you got to go at year 9, right? I think if you stay 10 years anywhere, any job, right? If you got hired because, hey, that guy's never going to change and he does what works. Well, guess what he's going to be in year 8 or 9? That guy's never going to change. We got to get rid of him. Pull the ripcord early, man. Just go ahead and do it. Because Paul Johnson, like more than other football coaches, was not going to change. Oh, by the way, just in case you want to like an ideal debut for how things are going to look in the upcoming season, why don't you play the national champs? Just go. And by the way, go do it on the road. Just go to their house. See how that goes.
Well, this Clemson thing is interesting because I'm seeing now that we're having a little bit of a discussion. I think your man Feinbaum brought this up about whether or not Clemson and Alabama at the top of college football and the way they've been at the top of college football is bad for college football. And I'm like, guys, is everybody here new to college football or something? Is this something that's different than nobody told me about?
Because prior to this, college football was a meritocracy. An even meritocracy with championships evenly distributed across college football. That's never, never been the case in college football. Never. Not from the start, when the sport was dominated by the Princetons, by the Harvards of the world. It wasn't in the middle age of the sport, when it was pretty much like Nebraska, Texas sometimes, Oklahoma. Right? Alabama, Notre Dame, the occasional Ohio State thrown in there. You get long dynasties and you get long runs. By the way, it's not a bad thing for the sport, because this is the way it has always been. If you wanted to make the counter argument that this is good for the sport, well, now we have an actual rivalry. A lot of rivalries in college football don't add up to much, right? For instance, my favorite, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Bedlam, anything can happen as long as Oklahoma wins.
Right.
Pretty sure that like in the course of that rivalry, Oklahoma State over 100 years has won like what, less than 30 times?
I know for a fact that it is less than 30 times. I have looked this up before. I didn't know Bedlam had a name until them couple times that Les Miles accidentally won when he was coaching at Oklahoma State. No, that is not a rivalry at all. They just play each other a lot.
Yeah, and this is an actual rivalry. Show me somebody who can stand toe-to-toe with the most industrialized, successful football program in the entire college football landscape, Alabama, and tell me that's bad? That's not bad, because guess what? Only Clemson's stepping up. Only Clemson, okay? This is the only chance you have against Debo consistently. Do you know who, like, number two is? Hugh Freeze.
Yes.
At Ole Miss. Maybe Auburn every now and then. Otherwise, you got nothing. You need a moonshot. You need a talented quarterback, like an especially like a generationally talented quarterback. Or you need to be Clemson, who's figured something out about Alabama that no one else has.
By the way, Bedlam, 88-18-7.
18? They tied 7 times? How?
They tied 7 times. That's all I got. Honestly, every time that series wound up in a tie, I would have to ask the question, who's shaving?
Oh, I know. You know what? Just go ahead and count those 7 for Oklahoma State.
Yes.
Just do it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, those are wins for Oklahoma State. If they only have 18 total wins in the series of Bedlam, then it's 25, because a tie is a win for them there.
But here's what I think about with Clemson. One, I feel like Clemson's been doing this in a way that we've forgotten how utterly staggering this is. that Clemson has managed to pull this off? Like, somebody once made the comparison to me between Clemson football and NC State basketball, where they would have been a lot happier if they'd never won those national championships, because those national championships gave them a poor sense of who they actually were. Right? Like, it gave them a belief in a ceiling that wasn't actually their ceiling, until all of a sudden it did truly, in fact, become the ceiling for Clemson. Because look, Clemson is a school in a small state with terrible public education. There's nothing to indicate that they should be as good as they are, except for the fact that Atlanta started producing a lot more football players and they were just right up the street and then they could go get them. Okay, cool. But they are low key kind of a little engine that could in this. Like, the idea that they are as good as they are, we don't have a lot of comparisons for this. Like, the rise of the Florida schools in the 80s and 90s, but it was still Florida. This school's in South Carolina.
Yeah. And it's not, by the way, like by the coast in South Carolina. It's up in the corner. It's up in the hills. That's even more remote than, say, the rest of South Carolina. It's not the capital city. It's not real close to the capital city. The way they've done things, right? I don't have like a definitive answer on here's exactly how Clemson did it, but they do a few things consistently that really, really challenge teams like Alabama, and Alabama specifically. And it's this. They recruit like crazy, right? But they recruit especially hard at positions that matter, like quarterback, like wide receiver. I mean, they've quietly cranked out an impressive roster of receivers, right? New Hopkins, this year they have T. Higgins and Justin Ross, who will both play in the NFL.
Mike Williams.
Sammy Watkins. They recruit at the perimeter brilliantly. And that like, if the design here, and I don't think it's the design intentionally, but if it pays off, in the national title game against Alabama, that's great. That's how you beat Alabama, is you take the bumpers off the defense, you beat them at the perimeter, and then you make them defend everything else. The other thing they've done is they've been brilliant about player development and about where they pull players. If you look at where they recruit, yeah, they recruit the same places everywhere else does, but they target very, very intelligently, and they sometimes find people who might be a bit under the radar and get in on them early, right? Like Christian Wilkins, who was a defensive lineman, first-round pick this year in the NFL draft. He was pulled from a New England prep school, right? That's and not because not for his grades. I'm talking somebody who just went to a New England prep school and they pulled him. That's not typically where you hear about these guys, but Clemson gets on them early. One other thing that keeps them in on this business, they have a head coach at defensive coordinator in Brett Venables. Brett Venables is consistently the most bang for buck that you can get for a defensive coordinator in college football, and they managed to keep him on the hook by paying him a gazillion dollars a year and giving him everything he wants.
And by the way, when he left Oklahoma, or when Oklahoma left him, he was done. It was time to go. Now Oklahoma can't put a defense together.
Maybe someone made a miscalculation here.
The miscalculation's name was Mike. Once Bob brought Mike back, then we had a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh my God, are you serious? He got fired from his last job because of defense.
Well, this is another thing that happens too, that the defensive coordinator in that case, and this personnel drama, was working for a defensive coordinator, right? Dabo must be an amazing boss, because at no point is Dabo going to come in and go, you know what, I think I know how to do that better.
No.
That hasn't been the move for Dabo. Dabo is a CEO. / cheerleader, / recruiter in chief, right? Dabo is not there to tell you how to do your job. He might have suggestions. I don't want to downplay his football acumen, because obviously he's got some. He has enough acumen to know, let's let Brent Venables run the defense and do things his way.
Also, I give this, in tied in line with defense, this is a big thing with Clemson too. You want to impress me with how your college football team is? Tell me you go six deep on your defensive line. Like, if you start telling me you go six deep on your defensive line with bosses, okay, now we can talk. Because that was the thing about Miami through all that time they got lost, deep on the defensive line. USC for that run in the 2000s, deep on the defensive line. Even Texas during that run that Mac Brown had, deep on the defensive line. And Clemson last year was just like, we have all the defensive linemen in the world. all of them.
Yeah, if you want to know, if you want to know where 2019 is going to be a different television series, it's going to be there, because I don't really care who you are. You don't reload from losing three first round picks on the defensive line. You don't. Somebody down the road will be able to take advantage of that, right? And I don't really know who it will be in the ACC. There's a lot in flux in the ACC. But on the whole, somebody's going to be able to take a bite out of you up front, because this is the other thing, too. Think about the times that Clemson and Alabama have met, and when Clemson has managed to win facing Alabama, they've caught some really, really outstanding breaks, right? I don't think Tua was you know, really even 90, 80% in that title game. He was harried. I think it affected the play calling. And then on top of that, a slightly impaired Tua had to face what? He had to face a three-headed first-round monster, right? Do you want to know why Alabama was flustered and calling fake field goals where the lead blocker was the holder? Let's not forget that, by the way. or the kicker. They used the kicker as the lead blocker in a fake field goal in a national championship scenario and did not score a point after that. So, you know, just run a play, man. Don't fake it. We watched Alabama and Georgia do this last year. If I can just implore everybody here, if it's fourth and, you know, manageable, run a play. Don't fake it, okay? Because even if it's open, guess who you're asking to execute a really important play at a crucial time? Someone who doesn't do this often with their arm.
Fun fact, by the way, as I recall, the last team to have three first-round picks on the defensive line in one year was North Carolina State in the 2006 draft. And if I'm not mistaken, they had the third-best defense in the ACC that year.
Really?
Third-best defense in the ACC that year. Like, I think Virginia Tech had a better defense that year, and I think Florida State may have. But they had three first-round picks, including Mario Williams, and I think they won eight games.
Chuck Amato is amazing.
How do you end? By the way, the fourth defensive lineman was also like a top half of the draft guy.
If you give me NC State at any point in their history sitting on eight wins, and you ask me to bet on the next four straight losses, I'm putting the mortgage on it. I know, I don't understand how gravity works, but I know not to jump off of tall things, okay? I'm not entirely sure on the physics of swimming and flotation, but I know not to go too far out in the water because I'll drown. And you know what else I know? I know not to put my hopes too hard on any NC State team, because once they hit eight wins, they start looking at the rafters for places to jump. That's law.
That sounds about right. That's about it. But if they're like 5-5 and facing number three Florida State, there's a chance they might pull it out.
Oh, take a flyer, man. Not that wagering is legal in all 50 of these states, but still, take that flyer, okay? Because that's when they are at their most dangerous. Like, NC State's one of those schools where if you look at the people who played for it, those people don't quite add up, right, to what NC State's record is, right? They sort of they go, I like this approach for recruiting, though, right? If you're like, hey, listen, we're not really going to push you too hard, but you'll get in the NFL draft. Oh, we'll get you there, and we'll get you drafted, right? This should be Texas's pitch, right? I think it kind of has been Texas's pitch, or at least it was in, like, late-stage MAC territory, was do you want to have a good time? You want to win, like, I don't know, seven games, eight games, nine games? Just come on to Austin, man. You'll be visible. You'll get a tan. It'll be great.
Now, here's what I don't like about what's going on with Clemson right now. They should be a renegade program, right? Like, a program like that that doesn't have really the recruiting ground naturally that you're supposed to have in order to win and you get this good. We're supposed to be asking questions all the time about how y'all doing this. We're supposed to be asking all the time about when the NCAA going to show up. NCAA ain't showing up yet, and it would be a lot more fun if they did. Not that I want Clemson to get shut down. Not that I think Clemson is cheating. But we don't have a good renegade program anymore. We used to have lots of them. We don't have one.
I think that's because people have gotten better at the beneficial to competition portions of the program when it comes to being a renegade program, right? Like, we're saying this. We're probably causing something to happen right now because you just said, well, we don't have a renegade program. That's what Clemson should be. I don't know. In 6 months, we could be reading about astonishing things happening in Clemson, right? We could be like, I didn't know you could give a player, like, a cybernetic leg. I didn't know that all of these guys were 30 and actually NFL players playing for a spare paycheck on Saturdays under pseudonyms, right? I didn't know that Dabo Swinney was running a money laundering ring, right? I'm not saying any of these things are happening, by the way, But what I'm saying is every time we assume things are really quiet at a program, they're like swans, right? Still up top, serene, and then paddling like crazy underneath to compete and stay afloat. I'm real wary of saying that, right? Because there could be renegade programs out there. But for the moment, I think what's taken over is like extreme corporate model for how to run a college football program, because there's so much money involved. No one wants to look too weird. No one wants too much suspicion from the NCAA, and they just hope the NCAA and the schools will just focus on important things like keeping kids with brain tumors from being eligible to play football.
Look, man, I'm just saying, if we replace Dabo with Barry Switzer, I would probably become a Clemson fan.
If you replace anybody with Barry Switzer, I'm at least going to think about it, right?
But I mean, Dabo's like, basically coaching according to the Barry Switzer model. Everybody else do their jobs. I'll be over here chilling and getting players.
You know what he doesn't have? There is no Duke and his hazard. Okay, there is no Hatfield and his McCoy. There is not a single bit of renegade NASCAR driver. He's a face, like in wrestling terms, right? He's not a heel. Do I want a Dabo heel turn? Absolutely. I didn't agree with all of it. I don't think you have to. But Will Leach wrote a piece that was, you know, Dabo Swinney's the real villain in college football. There's an angle of that like I kind of wish Dabo would embrace a little bit, because I like a bad guy.
Yes.
I like a villain. You know, I don't, you know what I don't like about Alabama's villain? Is that they don't even seem to enjoy it, right? There's no stomping. There's no celebration. There's like the communication so controlled that the players themselves can't sort of vent that in any way other than absolutely burying whoever they face. By the way, good luck, Duke. Good luck. I don't, you know, like Dylan tore his ACL in practice this week. They're inside linebacker. They're very thin up the middle, very young up the middle. And you know what? Maybe in October, Jimbo Fisher is going to be able to take advantage of that with Kellen Mond in College Station. But you know who's not going to be able to? Duke. Oh, they're going to know what they have to do, right? I don't know if you've had this athletic experience where you go, I know what I have to do, and there's simply no way I'm ever going to be able to do it. That's going to be Duke against Alabama.
Yeah, I have been there, and this is the year to try to get Alabama, right? Because the thing is, their recruiting gives them an unparalleled level of depth. But the good thing about depth is somebody gets hurt, you can put another guy in. The issue is, once you put that other guy in, you suddenly don't have depth anymore.
You don't have depth, and you don't have experience, right? Like that's the other thing is, you have guys who will make the little mistakes that keep drives going for the other team and mistakes that compound each other, right? Like if the linebacker misses an assignment here, it forces the safety up, and then all of a sudden this thing's open, right? It's like trying to hold water in your hand, right? It's just going to run out eventually. Fortunately for Alabama, like that kind of disaster feels like two losses. Like if they lost two, that'd be shocking, right?
And two losses this year plus two losses next year. And you know what happens in 2021? Nick Saban's on the hot seat.
Yeah, I don't know if Nick's the man for this job.
Yo, and people think we're exaggerating when we say this, but we're not.
Mm-mm. I want you to think about Frank Solich at Nebraska. I want you to think about how sort of gradual that decline was, and everyone pretty much recognized they were in decline. But even before it got rational, it was, I don't know. We didn't win that national title game there. Okay, that's cool. Nebraska, mostly rational. Let me go ahead and relocate you to the special environment of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, okay, where the university openly admits that football is a marketing tool for the program to not only bring students from in-state, but to get students from out-of-state who pay more, who float the state's budget that way, right, or float the state university's budget that way. If that starts to go down, there are a lot of things dependent on Alabama football that you don't even realize are dependent on Alabama football. And that's before we get to this kind of like, you know, existing psychosis that sort of possesses the whole state for 365 days a year, 366 in leap years. Yeah, like two losses would get Nick Saban on the hot seat and people would say he didn't have it anymore. And like the funniest part of all of this is that Nick Saban would go, oh, two losses, that's unacceptable. Like,
yep.
He would, at no point would he trot out, we had a lot of injuries and stuff happened. Nope. And you know why? Not for personal like reasons. It's because that's what he wants his players to hear, because all you hear out of Nick Saban's mouth are things that will affect his players and help them win football games. That's it. He's a machine.
Alabama's had two kinds of coaches in the last 60 years. And I'm saying 60 because I'm too lazy to look back farther than that. But the last 60 years, they've had two kinds of coaches. Coaches who win national championships and coaches who get fired. That's it. There's no in between. And when we say get fired, we don't mean like get fired after. There's no Earl Bruce in the Alabama history, right? Where you stick around for 9 years and give it a chance and make a few Rose Bowls. No, there's Bill Curry, where you win the SEC in your third year and you get fired. That's what Alabama has for you.
Bill Curry and Alabama, it's still a very fraught thing emotionally for Bill Curry and for the Alabama fan base. Yeah, that's it. You really, if you're not the Bear, right? And even the Bear was subject to these pressures, right? Don't for a second think he wasn't, right? Don't for a second think Nick Saban isn't. There's also this. There's going to be a third kind of coach, and it's one that at the time writers will deny because they want access and they want interviews. It's one that fans will deny because they do not want the truth. And it's one that Ohio State fans are living right now, which is this. It's not going to work when you're the next guy. You need to hire a patsy. You need to hire somebody who knows openly that the buyout is really the big payoff from this job, right? Because there's no way you can live up to that, because if you look at like how likely it is that you hire two Nick Sabans in a row or two Urban Meyers in a row, it's not happening. I really don't care. You can get somebody in there and win 10 games, right? Everybody at one point who gets hired at Ohio State or at Alabama wins like 9 or 10 games. You have to be a complete failure to not do that, right? Because you're the show there. You are it. Now, is there somebody out there who realizes this? Maybe. I hope so. Let's go ahead and hire a retread, man. You know who they should hire to replace Nick Saban? Mike Shula. That's who they should hire. Because you know what? We have experience with him, both in the hiring, the execution. We know exactly what we're getting. We know the talent level is going to remain high. We know how easy it is to fire him. That was a great process. That was a solid firing, right? They just brought him in, said, hey, man, bowl game and you're out, right? Like, and he's like, I'll go, but, you know, it's fine. They need to hire somebody that they've already fired so that they can just go ahead and have the process laid out and everyone understands what's happening, right? I don't know if it's going to happen with Ryan Day at Ohio State. I'm not saying that Ryan Day is going to fail. What I am saying is that Ryan Day will fail if he is attempting to live up to the standards of Urban Meyer, because go look at the run that Urban Meyer had at Ohio State. There really isn't much parallel for it in their history. That includes Woody Hayes.
And see, what I give them credit for, though, they made the right kind of hire. Because there's one program that has consistently figured out how to get the right next guy, and that was Oklahoma. And they did it all basically with the same thing. First-time head coaches. We are shooting for the young guy who's great every single time. When they didn't get it right was that post-Switzer spell, right? And they tried it a couple times. Gary Gibbs, but he was a little bit too in-house. John Blake, and of course the Howard Schnellenberger year. And then they went and got Bob Stoops, who was your classic Oklahoma hires you to be head coach guy. And then they went and hired Lincoln Riley, another of your classic Oklahoma hires as head coach guy. And Ryan Day, like, he fits that template a little bit more, but that's your only chance. But like, the idea we're going to get the best old guy, no, that don't work. That don't work at all.
Nope. No, don't go get the best old guy. Don't get a retread, right? You know, go fail big. That's one of my favorite like coaching sayings. Hey, listen, if you're gonna miss big. I don't want you to miss little, right? Don't give me like the soft landing of diminished expectations. I want you to just go ahead and either hit it or don't, right? Like, if you look at successful hires, by the way, a lot of them come from outside of the family. I know it's a nice fantasy to hire someone who went to the school, who was young, who can go ahead and take things over. Sometimes that works. Nebraska might get that with Scott Frost, right? Everyone's going to hate him, right? Because in order to get that program in the kind of shape they need it to be, you're going to have to be a cold, mean, and efficient person. It's a hard place to compete. It's a hard place to recruit, right? But USC, every time USC's hired, right? Like, okay, USC, I don't know how decisions are made at USC. Do you know how decisions are made at USC? And I mean anywhere.
Not really.
It's run exactly the way I want private schools run by very wealthy people to be run. And that is arbitrarily, usually off a yacht, and with some spectacularly bad decision making, right? That's what I want. I want it to look like Succession. Every time that they've gone outside and just made like a hire like Pete Carroll, things have looked pretty good, right? I know like Florida fans, you know, are like, hey, let's let's hire somebody who, you know, went to Florida and did this. We hired Dan Mullen and things are going okay, right? Like, we got lucky doing it with Spurrier once. But then the other major successful coach in Florida's modern history is Urban Meyer, who has no affiliation whatsoever with the school. And that worked out all right, right? You're better off going young. You're better off going outside if you don't have, like, the guy, the obvious person for the gig.
By the way, speaking of USC, be sure to let me know every time Urban Meyer is on TV and they ask him a question about Clay Helton so I can tune in and see exactly how he's going to handle this. Tell me when they're talking about Michigan and tell me when they're talking about USC, and I will tune to Fox.
Oh, I got it. No, I've been sticking on a third option this whole time. Now, it's a story that requires a couple of moving parts, okay? And I don't have, like, full disclosure, I don't have any indication this is going to happen. It's purely fan fiction on my point. But I've got one for you that will happen. I just feel it. It's like in my bones, okay? He had out the two jobs in his contract. What were they? You got one, Michigan.
Notre Dame.
Other one was Notre Dame, right? Notre Dame, Brian Kelly. You know how long Brian Kelly's been at Notre Dame?
Wow. At this point, it's got to be about 10 years, right?
Oh, okay. Creeping up on the 10-year rule here, right? Not going to change. Talking about football coaches who are not going to change. This is the way I do things. This is the way it's worked, and it's been pretty successful. Hard to argue with that with Brian Kelly, by the way. He's brought stability to a Notre Dame program that, you know, was doing crazy things for a while there, you know? Sleeping on people's couches, hiring Charlie White, making some questionable life decisions, right? But at the same time, we're creeping up on that 10-year rule. And Brian Kelly, for Notre Dame, Brian Kelly's the kind of guy who will get you possibly to a national title game, but thus far has not won it. Might get you to the playoff, but hasn't raised the talent level to the point where they've even been competitive with top-tier teams. Like, look at their performance in the playoff last year against Clemson. Look at their performance against top-tier teams. It's been ugly. Occasionally, they'll catch an LSU slipping in a bowl game, right? Like a dysfunctional LSU team at that point. But otherwise, it hasn't been up to snuff. The idea and the narrative that we'll build, you know, in my story presupposes that they get tired of Brian Kelly, that they say, hey, it's been great, but you've hit a ceiling, right? And from that point forward, over the next year or two, it could go sour very, very quickly for them. I don't think there's any indication this team won't be good, right? Ian Book's a great quarterback. They've managed to be very, very tough on defense consistently over the past 5 or 6 years. I could see a thing where he survives this and pushes forward into a second decade of service to Notre Dame. But if Urban Meyer's sitting right there, schools have a way of gently and slowly and inexorably moving towards, hey, you know what? There's this thing that bothers us about you. Oh, and then there's this thing, right? Maybe you need a performance improvement plan, in other words, right? Maybe mm-hmm. we need to go ahead and just have a couple of quarterly meetings with you about how you're doing at this job. Yeah, that's what I see, because I don't know if Urban Meyer's quite an LA-type dude. I don't really know if he wants to get much further out of the Midwest. And, y'all, it's right there in Indiana, and he's always wanted that job. He's already coached there. I just think that's a way more obvious path than USC. Oh, also, one other thing. We were talking about USC being crazy. Let me remind you, USC's crazy. I have no idea that they would make the obvious choice. None.
Yeah, now that's fair, but here's the thing about Urban Meyer at Notre Dame, at least where I stand. I remember that time that Bob Stoops looked like he might be going to Notre Dame. And he walked in there and was like, this is what I'm going to need from recruiting. And on the list was a bunch of JUCOs. And Notre Dame was like, dude, do you know who we are? Like Tony Rice, woohoo. But we're not doing that. And I look at what Brian Kelly's done with talent there, and I'm like, I don't know how much more talent you can get at a school that, again, makes you take calculus as a freshman.
Yeah, no, they've got a real existential choice to make, right? And it's one that Notre Dame, when faced with, has always just kind of deferred to, well, we'll just hire somebody else and not change the requirements too much, right? And that's maybe where they lose out on the Urban Meyer sweepstakes in 2 years, right? Not this year. I think it's like a 2-year process down the road. If they lose out on him, it will be because of that, because ultimately Notre Dame doesn't want to change. They really don't want to budge their admissions requirements and the allowances they make for football already. But if they get unhappy with what they've got, and they just want something new because everybody gets tired of everybody after, about 10 years, and you're not like a Bob Stoops figure who, you know, basically could pick his own exit. That's how successful he was relative to everybody else. Yeah, I could totally see either one of those things happen.
And it don't take no 10 years to get tired of Brian Kelly. Like, where are the people that like him? Because I ain't one of them.
No, I mean, you know, you can. I hope anyone listening to this understands this. Man, I respect your skill level at what you do, right? Specifically, I'm giving you that 20% of a compliment. The rest, I'm just not going to mess with. I can't. No one likes him. He's not a particularly likable guy. That's not going to help him, by the way. Like, typically, if you're real likable and, you know, everyone at the university gets along with you, well, that credit might go a long way. I don't know how much credit he has there. Again, especially with a patch of green grass on the other side of the fence in the form of Urban Meyer or whoever else just kind of bubbles up as, you know, the obvious person for this gig. There's this, too. It's like one other note on that. It's not the same job it used to be.
Nope.
It's really not. Coaches think in terms, like, especially young coaches now, think in terms of recruiting. They think in terms of talent base. And they think in terms of, okay, how long do I have? What can I get into the, locker room in terms of qualifying? And then, you know, what are the expectations? Like, how do I manage that? They're all really, really anti-romantic about this, right? And I think the appeal for Notre Dame is primarily romantic at this point.
How about this? How about somehow Texas get really excited again about a four-loss season, and then you can take that dude. How'd you like that, Notre Dame? Can we get another exciting four-loss season? You can get that.
This falls into my other prediction, by the way, which is that no matter what happens this year, short of total world domination, like the state of Texas, both Texas and Texas A&M, the primary big Cal universities, right, the Bell Cal universities, both of them will be disappointing.
Well, I mean, honestly, one of them is guaranteed to be disappointing because they wear maroon and white. That's just what they do over there. And the other one will be disappointing because quietly, if I'm not mistaken, Texas has won 7 outright conference championships in 45 years. Did you know that?
7?
Outright. I think the number is 7. I've counted this.
It's a very, very different universe if Oklahoma just doesn't exist, right? Like Texas. It is. Like, if for some reason at Norman, they're like, are we gonna play football? And they're like, nah, the sport of the future is lacrosse. Just ignore football. Texas is sitting on, what, 20 titles?
Yeah, they find another way to mess this up, right? They wasn't that, when Oklahoma was down, they wasn't that good either, right? It's just... I'm just saying we're really excited about a four-loss season over there. And I just don't know when we became the people that got this excited about a four-loss season. What, because you beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl when Georgia's really good players didn't play?
I'm very excited about Sam Ehlinger, by the way, because this is as good as it's going to get for Sam Ehlinger. It is. Like, this is it. This is Pete. This is the Tebow principle. Like, this is as good as his athletic life is ever going to get. And, like, it has to happen this year, right?
If you
told me, like, Heisman for Sam Ehlinger, I would completely believe that because people might vote for him and just go, like, oh, yeah, that's just like a brisket-fed Tim Tebow. I can vote for that. That'll be fine. And there's also this. They'll run him to death. They will run him all over the place. He will have guys open in the passing game because, you know, if you can play action with one person, hey, you can make things happen, all right? Like, Sam Ehlinger is going to be a delight to watch this year because he's most of what Texas has offensively.
All I'm saying is this. The last time Texas came off one of these four-loss seasons, all super excited because of what happened toward the end of the previous season. They played against UCLA at home. Do you remember the score of that game?
Was that 66-3?
66-3.
Why?
The thing about the 66-3, though, was... like, at least there are some people that like Herman, you know, so he's got some goodwill there. There isn't a person on earth that like Makovic. So, like, when Makovic goes to 66-3, it was awful. But I do think that suddenly also meant time to rub your hands together and get ready because we about to get this dude up out of here. And they did.
Yeah, it's a dark moment when you find yourself rooting for a loss. I've been there. When Florida went into Mississippi State. With Ron Zook
04.
teetering on the edge of disaster, and Sylvester Croom putting another speed bump of a Mississippi State team. That's what, by the way, greatest Mississippi State teams pre-Dan Mullen, all speed bump teams, right?
Yes.
What are we going to do? We're just like, we're only 3 inches high, but we'll stub your toe to death.
Yes.
Right? If you're too stupid to not step over us, we'll just let you stub your toe on us until you die. And like clockwork, Florida lost to Mississippi State and Ron Zook got fired. I'd be lying to everybody if I didn't say, oh man, that was awesome. You guys are great. Thanks so much. Sawyer did this to Muschamp.
I'm not sure that there's been a time where, like, low-key, maybe not racism, has ever been more hilarious than people getting fired for losing to Sylvester Croom in Mississippi State. And I have to say maybe not, because, yeah, he happened to be the black coach, but they were also Mississippi State, which losing to is kind of a fireable offense. But there's a reason why we called it getting croomed.
It's always a confounding factor, right? Because you go, maybe these people are being crazily racist. In American history, that's always a good bet. On the other hand, maybe these people are just being crazily Mississippi State about this, right? Like, Croom really didn't get enough credit for being the Reaper, you know? Like, I think that's really what Mississippi State, on average, should hope for football-wise. Hey, we're not the guy who's going to kill you, but we will hold the shovel that buries you, right? Like, that's what Mississippi State, like, in college football, we talk about this a lot. You don't get to be king. Like, most people don't get to be king, right? It is an oligarchy. There's very few people up top. So how do you find your happiness if you're at that, like, B tier, right? I think that, like, a very healthy approach to this is to go, well, we're the team that's just going to make you want to die, right? We're going to run you to death, or we'll scare you to death, or we'll be the entertaining team, right? Like, best example of this ever is Kentucky football under Hal Mumme. They just decided, right, with no hope, and no assets whatsoever, we're just going to try this entirely new, different thing. We're going to run a crazy blitz-happy defense, and we're just going to entertain, right? If you show out, you're going to watch us lose, like, the most entertaining 54-48 loss you have ever seen. We'll have an air raid siren in the stadium, and y'all come watch, like, the most charismatic bunch of 500 football players that you'll ever see, right? I don't understand why anyone in the sport is going to play boring football at 500, right? If you know that's where you're at, find your happiness there, right? You know who's real good at this? Washington State, like modern era Washington State. Hey, we'll just hire Mike Leach. We'll scare the crap out of people. Hey, maybe we'll win 10 games. But on the other hand, maybe we'll open by losing to Sacramento State or Portland State and then win 9 games anyway because it's the Pac-12 and nothing makes sense. Yeah. Find your happiness. Be more like Mississippi State fans of the saner variety who understand that, you know, man, we're not here to win the party, but we're going to steal the keg and go home.
Well, here's something that's wild to me about Washington State, right? Like, Bill Snyder's a college football Hall of Famer as a coach because of what he managed to do at Kansas State, which is one of the hardest places in the world to win. Although the way he figured out how to do this was basically, I'm going to get teams full of grown men. That is the best chance we have. You're down and out and at a junior college in Kansas. Come here, 23-year-old. We will have a place for you to play. Washington State, though, has low-key done that under 3 different coaches over the last 30 mm-hmm. years, right? They had the Erickson was there briefly, but they did it with Erickson. Mike Price won the Pac-12 like 2 or 3 times, and then they get Mike Leach.
Yeah. By the way, there are great Mike Price stories that everybody knows about and are highly public. Some of them are fictional. Some
yes.
of them are real.
He won the lawsuit.
My favorite is no. Won the lawsuit. Okay. So I'm not going to repeat anything that's legally actionable and has decided to be legally actionable. Right. But Matt Hayes, right. Veteran college football, sports writer, late of, the Sporting News. He one time got to shadow, like, imagine this, by the way, like football is so uptight and controlled now, and to a degree it's always been that way. Like, Mike Price was unique for this back then. He let Matt Hayes sit next to him on the sideline, like, just sit there with a notebook, right, and just write stuff down. And he looked back at Hayes and said mid-game, hey, you got to remind me to run the ball. Hey, you know, like, middle of the game, just, you know, just check up on me, make sure I'm like eating my vegetables and running the ball. Also, He let him call a play. Like in an actual live fire game. Yeah, no, this wasn't like spring ball. He let him call a live fire play. Mike Price rules. You're not going to get me to say a bad thing about that dude.
That must have been when he was at UTEP, right?
No. I'm pretty sure it was when he was at Washington State.
Oh, wow. Like when he actually had stakes.
Yeah. I don't think this was at UTEP. I'll have to ask Matt. But I'm pretty sure a college football coach of an FBS team, right, with real stakes on the line in a major conference at that time, the Pac-10, had a reporter there being like, "Hey man, struggling remembering to run the ball. Hate doing it. Can you just go ahead and just check in on me every now and then, man?"
Matt Hayes, a guy I used to hate and now I think I kind of like, but have never actually met, because that's what life is like on the internet these days.
I think once you start. Once you talk to people who understand what this sport is, you'll gain a respect for them, even if you're not like agreeing with 100% or even 50% of what they say, because they get the sort of lunacy at the heart of this.
Well, he's no longer riding for keeping the kids broke, and that helps.
Yeah, no, I mean, like that's kind of like, there are certain things, right? Like I can't have that. I can't have. I really don't like you redeeming people who I think are pretty irredeemable, right? Like just to come right out and say it, Meyer's going to get hired again, right? And I don't think he's irredeemable as a human, right? But as a coach, as a college football person, like that's going to be awkward. There's going to be people who struggle with that, right? I encourage them to struggle with that, because I won't. I've made up my mind, and I think it's going to stay made up. But this happens every time you reintroduce anybody. And by the way, like, who else wants to keep people broke? Dabo. Now he's got, like, I understand his argument. He thinks, well, I do college football. College football was good for me. It helped me get my life in a much better place. If you know where Dabo is from and his story, it's bad. It's real bad. Like just broke, like father not in the picture, just a terrible scene, right? That's all granted. But he sees it as, this system worked for me. It's going to work for everybody. That's either naive or disingenuous. And, you got to mention that, right? Like, hey, I am not attacking you on a personal level. This is a principle. You're against paying these players. You're against revenue sharing. Why? Like, really put it out there. Like why? I heard your argument. This is work. This is labor. Where is the capital in exchange for this?
And I'm sure you tell them all the time, Dabo, that this is work and that this is business when you need them to get something actually done. Like, my thing with Dabo is, Dabo's the guy, and I try to explain this to folks all the time, and I don't mean this as a judgment of him. I just know enough about the world to know this is true. He's the guy that you ain't never going to be able to explain the concept of white privilege to, because that dude's mom was sharing a bed with him his first year in college because they were that kind of broke, right? And so he sees himself like, look, I came from all this broke. Like, how can you not do it? Not knowing that white privilege thing really kicks in at the right time. How do I know that white privilege kicked in to help Dabo Swinney in his life? I'll tell you how I know. That man got Dabo on his business cards. That's how you know that white privilege has kicked in.
Oh, no. If your professional name is Dabo,
yeah.
You need to look at how this happened and understand what a special comet you are, okay? Because like you are yes, someone who has worked very hard. Lots of people who worked hard out there who didn't get the same kind of reward, right? Even half of the same or a quarter of the same kind of reward that you enjoy. Might want to think about why that is, right? You think, oh, well, that's just random fate. Is it? Is it really? Go back to your name. Your name's Dabo. Think about where you came from, right? Like that's a hard thing when you go, hey, I think this person's probably not a terrible human being. I think they're advocating for something that in a lot of ways is unjust, right? And in some cases, terrible. You got to be able to reconcile that if you're going to talk about it, right? Like you have to be able to sit down and say, I'm just going to keep saying this and keep reminding you of this.
Well, Dabo, ask yourself this. Why did your former coaches call you and say get into coaching and not some of your teammates? Because as good as these Dabo Swinney football teams are, he ain't no football genius. Right? Like, I need to know why. You need to ask yourself why they thought you were the one to call to be like, yo, I think you ought to get into this.
Yeah, like from the jump. Because I know it wasn't, who an obvious intellectual powerhouse is, right? Dabo's smart in a lot of ways, right? Like, Look at Clemson. Look at Clemson before. Look at Clemson after. Look at the decision Dabo is going to make, by the way, to finish his career at Clemson.
Yes.
Because there's no way he's going to Alabama. Because you know what his value at Alabama is? Whatever it is, it's not what he has at Clemson. And it's not what he is at Clemson, right? His value over replacement Clemson coach is insane.
Yes.
Like, whatever that metric is, it's vast, right? His value over replacement coach at Alabama, you know what it is? It might be level. It's probably not up from the current management, right? Like, if Dabo were to ever take that Alabama job, it would happen after we engage the Shula protocol that I was talking about, where we just hire Mike Shula so we can fire him again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he would do that. But it's going to be so late in his career at this point, because he's older than people realize, right? He's like 57, I want to say, 56. He's you know, he's approaching 60, a time when, like, some people reconsider things. Or if you're Bill Snyder, you're entering your, like, you know, ninth decade of coaching Kansas State football and thinking about an additional century in the office, right?
Oh, this, oh, Dabo, I looked this up once when Texas was looking to hire Saban, which actually almost happened, which is still kind of mind-blowing when you consider. I tried to look up, like, the most high-profile coach to go from one job to another, and basically what I came up with was when Johnny Majors went from Pittsburgh to Tennessee. And, you know, Johnny Majors had won a national championship at Pittsburgh, but it was at Pittsburgh. My point being, what Clemson has become now, you don't leave that to go somewhere else. Period.
Would you consider Alabama to be the crown jewel of you know, college football brands at the moment? Not jobs. It's a terrible job, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, it might, like, be the worst job in America, low-key.
I mean, it's up there, right? Or it could be Auburn, depending. I feel like Alabama's like being in a constant sort of pressure cooker filled with bees, whereas Auburn, like, you know, 5 out of 7 days, it's pretty nice, and then 2 out of 7 days, you're just being beaten with tire irons, right? like I feel like at Auburn, it's just kind of like, hey, we're all cool, man. It's family. By the way, we're going to go, like, beat you with towels loaded with soap, right? Like, that's, and then they're going to greet you the next day, like, Auburn's actually way more southern in Alabama than a lot of ways, because in Alabama, it's like, I want to get this straight. We're going to murder you. Maybe tomorrow. It may be in 10 years. But eventually, we're going to kill you because you're not doing your job, right? And that's constant, right? There's nothing less southern to me than something which is consistently done, right? Like, Auburn's way more southern than that, because it's like, oh, man, that's good. You won 9 games last year. That's fine. The next will be like, you only won 9 games. I'm holding your firstborn hostage in my basement. You don't get him back until you beat Alabama, right? Like, okay, cool. Then the next day it's like, oh, hey, see you at church.
Auburn would make more sense to people if it had the word, one of the following 3 words in its name, State Tech or A&M, because that's what it is. It's the State Tech A&M school. It's just not called that.
No, and by the way, I was getting to this argument because asking about Alabama, because you said a high-profile coach. Well, I would argue anybody who got that Alabama job at one point was a high-profile coach. I know only one guy who hustled backwards like that, and that's Coach Fran, Dennis Franchione.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, deciding to, you know what, I'm going to go at Texas A&M. Now, that may seem like hustling backwards. I think the other option that somebody said Franchione was looking at, talked about with his staff, was Kansas.
He wanted to go that bad.
He wanted to go that bad. So that says something about the Alabama job. Auburn, as an A&M or Tech, like, this is, you know, alternate college football histories. If there were a scenario where LSU was not the only sort of, like, single source program,
yes,
in the SEC West, right? Like, the state of Mississippi would be a national football power year in and year out if they did not split the baby between Mississippi State and Ole Miss, right? Consider Alabama, like, the small miracle that this is. Alabama is so committed to football that they are in much the same situation that Mississippi is, but they managed to put out consistent national title contenders, right? Alabama more consistently than Auburn. But what you consider, like, achievement at Auburn and where they're at, right, still punching well above weight, right, in order to compete not just for SEC titles but for national titles, right? Like, that's how freakish the entire state of Alabama is, because they did exactly what Mississippi did. They did exactly what the state of South Carolina did. They did exactly what, you know, Tennessee did, and they, you know, did in double what Florida does in at least triplicate, right, in splitting up that massive talent base. And yet Alabama manages to outpunch every other state in the United States when it comes to overall sort of like football goods.
How about outpunching Texas?
The
damn state of Texas. Outpunching Georgia. The damn state of Georgia.
Like the three biggest football states in this country are Texas, California, and Florida, right? Now go look back at the last 20 years and see how many national titles came out of those three. Whatever that number is, it should be double.
Yep.
But for the state of Alabama.
Yep. District of Alabama and Mississippi, though. Flagship state of school in the state of Mississippi decided, nope. Rather than attract good football players, we're going to wave this flag for 35 years. Right? Like, has any program ever just decided, no, we don't want to be good. We just don't care about being good, like Ole Miss did for 35 years.
Like, that's, like, consider this. The like Alabama, the state where you know, the home of George Wallace, right? The state that was the site of, like, some of the ugliest police protester confrontations of the civil rights era, right? A state where it took them, God, like, 30 years to prosecute, like, the bombers of a church in downtown Birmingham, okay? When confronted with integration in football, right, Alabama was like, well, I mean, how racist do we have to be, really? Do you see what Sam Cunningham did? Do you see what Michigan State and Michigan and Notre Dame have been bringing on board? You see all that? I mean, really, like, can we go into the shop and get an adjustment to be this much less racist so we can integrate, right? Now consider Ole Miss. Ole Miss saw all that and was just like, you know what? This racism thing's working for us. Let's just keep this rolling. Let's just keep this going. Like, that's astonishing to me, because I don't know a bigger lever that you can pull or push than football. I don't, right? Like, even Alabama, like, you know, football eventually, by degrees and margins, won out, right? And won out pretty fast once it became obvious. It wasn't that obvious for some others, and that blows my mind.
Let me tell you some things that I know happen in real life that I wish I could have seen with my own eyes, or that I'd watch a 30 for 30 on. Steve White's official visit to the University of Mississippi.
He's like, I really wish, like, if I could, like, you go, okay, well, what streaming television program would you want? Official visits. That's what I want. Give me a time machine. Go back so I can watch Steve White go to Ole Miss, right? Actually, I want to watch Steve White go to Tennessee. Steve White's one of the smartest people I know. And it was like, here, why don't you meet Phil Fulmer? I'm not saying Phil Fulmer's, like, outright dumb. What I'm saying is that Phil Fulmer is, you know, not overtly intellectual. He's not the guy who's like, so I was reading White Teak by Zadie Smith the other day. And, you know, the scene really affected me. You know, have you heard her sing? She sings like an angel. Like, that's not Phil Fulmer, you know? And Steve, like, I talk comic books with Steve, right, when I talk to him. And, like, you know, it's just not that guy. I want the Willie Williams visits, all of them. I want to go back and get linebacker Willie Williams, who kept an amazing diary since removed from the internet of his visits to, among other places, Florida and Miami, right? Give me that Jeremy Shockey, like, visit. If it was a visit for him, it was a visit for somebody else. Give me the one where he, like, rides a jet ski into the side of a yacht and doesn't die, right? Like, what an indestructible Viking moron Jeremy Shockey was, right? What, like, an Oaky Thor he must have been from Ada, Oklahoma, to just careen into the side of a yacht at full speed on a jet ski and be like, no, bro, I got this. Like, you know what his teammates must have thought? They must have been like, oh, yes, that guy's on our team. We're never going to die, right? I got one more recruiting visit I want, and it's one that didn't happen, all right? Because, you know, like, one of my favorite players of all time is Percy Harvin.
Yes.
And I love Percy. I love his attitude, and I love any story you can tell me about Percy at the University of Florida, because he took nothing from anyone. Nothing. Nothing off anyone at any time. That's the guy who spanked Urban Meyer on national television. National hero, right? make the statue of Percy Harvin spanking Urban Meyer as time expires in the 2008 national title game. And I will contribute to that Kickstarter. Percy Harvin was being recruited by USC. Have I told you this story?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's real short. You know, I was supposed to meet him at USC, show him around, have an evening for the ages in L.A.
Reggie Bush.
Show this young genius. That is correct. Reggie Bush was supposed to show this young genius from Virginia Beach what life was going to be like in a place without humidity, right? Where he was the only show in town. Like, football in L.A. starts with USC. Everything else is just kind of optional. Who did not show up to take Percy Harvin on this recruiting visit? That is correct. Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush just decided he had other things to do and allegedly stood him up for this recruiting visit. I think this reflects well on both of them that, you know, he's like, okay, well, you're not going to meet me. I'm just going to go to Gainesville, Florida instead of Los Angeles.
Wow. Yeah, wow. I did not know. I knew that Pete was on him because, you know, Pete, like Percy Harvin wound up in Seattle. My favorite thing about Pete when he first got to the Seahawks was basically getting every player he tried to recruit and did not.
Yeah.
Like his scouting notebook from these guys in high school was definitely used to help put that roster together in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. I like both of them because I like both Carroll and Belichick because I know they have a very deep list of proprietary data, notes, and measurements that they keep on recruits and a certain way of evaluating them. I have no doubt that it's systematic. Do you know what a lot of that equals a lot of the time for me? Watching the NFL and going, oh, they drafted that guy? Oh, man. Like, the biggest example of this, like two examples of this in Seattle, they got Bruce Irvin out of West Virginia, who, if you watched him in college, you were just like, oh, man, all that guy can do is pass rush, but it's awesome.
Yes.
I will sit here and watch this all day because that tackle is just weeping in between snaps, praying that guy doesn't come back. The other one, Tyler Lockett. Anyone who watched, like you talk about Kansas State,
yes,
right? Two things about Kansas State. If you're a tight end, guess what you're going to be? Quarterback. That's it. Every tight end can play quarterback. You want to be, are you a giant dude who played tight end in high school and occasionally threw a trick pass? Guess what? Bill Snyder sees a quarterback there, son. A 1938 quarterback, by the way.
Yes.
Like a wing T quarterback who, you know, weight trained by lifting livestock and hay bales, right? Just, he wanted that all day. Also, if you were like a scrambling quarterback that nobody trusted with a passing offense, but you were just dazzling in the open field, and maybe you had some grades and issues with academics, that's fine. We'll make it work. We'll get you in JUCO. You'll come here. You'll be fine, right? Like, no cooler watch in the world than Michael Bishop.
I was about to say, I watched the guy you're talking about play in high school, and his name is Michael Bishop.
Michael Bishop ruled. Like, just understand the sheer devilment that he was for defenses, right? Like, awesome. And one of those pure college players, I love talking about guys who were really hit their peak in college because you can just be dominant on a level that no one else can ever really approach, especially in the pros. Like that just, it just doesn't happen. And you also get to freelance a lot and you're competing against guys who aren't as good as you, especially if you're Kansas State, scheduling a lot of patsies. I know people are like, oh, I don't like to watch blowouts. Watching Michael Bishop run around in like a 60-10 blowout of somebody in the Big 12, that's a fun time. That's a delightful time. I will watch that all day long. But yeah, when Carroll drafted Tyler Lockett, like I remember thinking like, oh yeah, that guy. Like I'm sure that you had a lot of data on him, but ultimately a lot of those draft picks when you go, well, are we going to pull the trigger or not? I think it came down to, oh yeah, I remember that guy. He ruled. Let's take him.
Dude, Michael Bishop, his cousin Jermaine played wide receiver, and they were hell on wheels. Also, watched Michael Bishop play basketball and just do incredible dunks in the layup line before the game. Like, oh my goodness. I want to ask you this before we get out of here, before they kick us out of the studio. Something happened on Twitter last week that was hilarious, and I feel bad for Earl Bennett because I don't know how he didn't realize what he was walking into, where he asked if the Andrew Luck retirement was the most bizarre story of the last 10 years in sports. And never mind the fact that the Tiger Woods story is still within a 10-year window. I was like, Earl, you used to play college football. Is it really that boring at Vanderbilt that you didn't realize what else is going on for everybody else?
I mean, come on, it was at Vanderbilt. You know where one of their former coaches like worked after he lost the job, Woody Weidenhofer? That, by the way, 10-year window of Woody Weidenhofer at one point working in a toll booth. in Panhandle, Florida. There's a weird story. You want another one? If you want another one, guess what? College football has set a buffet for you, and it's open. It's a steam tray. Just take as much as you like, okay? I got Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss over here, okay? I've got Laramie Tunsil, all right, who in the first round of the NFL draft on draft night was extorted by a member of his entourage, all right, his agent, who I believe he was related to. I'm trying to remember, his in-law or something. But Laramie Tunsil, his agent, his spurned agent, just posting a picture on Laramie Tunsil's social media of him smoking weed through a gas mask bong.
Yes.
Okay? I'm not even, like, through the appetizers yet in terms of weird, because there's an entree back there called Bobby Petrino. Everything Bobby Petrino. All of it. Just take it, okay? It's all yours, okay? The Condicis. I've got stories about Robert Condici. You want any of them? They're all weirder than Andrew Luck retiring, okay?
Hold on. There's a dead woman who never lived.
There's a dead woman who never lived, who then died. And then everyone just sort of said, yeah, I guess that happened. And it turns out she wasn't real and had been Skyping, right, from the theoretical dead with one of Notre Dame's linebackers before the national title game. Yeah, that happened. And an internet site, a blog, Deadspin.com, found out about it. That's weird. You know, I mean, you know what else? Like, if you just get to the little transactions, college football is weirder. Like Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin got fired before the national title game. How do you do that?
Lane Kiffin got fired at the airport on a Friday night.
And his replacement showed up drunk to practice and was fired. Like that. That happened. I don't have to make any of this up. None of it. It's all right there, y'all. Right? Like if you look at, like, players have gone on strike because they hated their coach. That never happens in football. Guess where it happened? It happened in Arizona for John McAvoy.
Told you nobody likes him.
Yeah, guess what? If nobody likes you at Texas, they fire you. If nobody likes you at Arizona, the players basically threaten to run you out of town on a rail.
It's him or me.
It's him or me. And you're an Arizona player. I hate to put it this way. An Arizona football player is, you know, more replaceable than a Texas football player, okay?
Yes.
Not as many people care deeply about it out there, just by numbers. It's not happening, all right? And that worked. That's, like, the number of things that you could trot out here before you even get to Lenny Kekua before you get to Bobby Petrino having the worst ill-timed motorcycle accident. By the way, some people don't even believe that's the story. Like,
right.
That's how deep the conspiracy theories roll here, that they don't even believe that was the story, okay? That's before you get to Miami in the 80s or the 90s. That's before you get to whatever happened in 2008, 2009 with the Florida Gators football team, okay? The mysteries abound, but what is known is already astonishing enough to make Andrew Luck look like a mere transaction.
Hold on, think about how we just threw Mike Price in earlier, right? Mike Price, coach at Alabama, reportedly, and I don't even like to say reportedly because, again, he won the lawsuit against Sports Illustrated. By the way, they lost a handful of those, as I recall. But anyway, apparently wild out at the strip club so bad that they couldn't bring him back as the coach at Alabama, where we know they won't let things slide.
And then functionally began the death of Sports Illustrated.
Yep.
As a result of it. Oh, let's go back in history. You want to talk about dead publications? Remember the Saturday Evening Post? You probably don't.
Oh, this story
is
great.
You know why? Oh, yeah, yeah. Because the Saturday Evening Post ran a story, I believe, by Atlanta icon Herman Bischer. Mm-hmm, right? The guy who apparently his motto was cut Bischer and die. Like, you didn't cut a word from his columns, right? Herman Bischer, by the way, once emailed me when I made fun of him for being, you know, just, I don't know, kind of just Herman Bischery, right? I, like, made mild fun of him, and he emailed me at, like, the age of 92 to, like, upbraid me. If you're emailing people at 92 to defend your reputation, you did it wrong, all right? You did life wrong. You did your reputation wrong. Don't blame me. I'm not going to be emailing anyone at 92. I'm barely emailing people at 42, okay? But point being, he said that, I believe it was Wally Butts, Georgia coach, and Bear Bryant, coach at Alabama, had been shaving points in football games. Guess what they determined in court? That they had not. When that happens, you got to pay out a big settlement to both of them, which happened. And that bankrupted and killed the Saturday Evening Post. Yeah, like, the weird is deep, and it goes forever.
That is my man, Spencer Hall. Check him out. BannerSociety.com, SBNation.com, best college football writer in America. We didn't get a chance to get to talking about the Popeye's chicken sandwich, but you know what? By the time we do this again, maybe they'll have Popeye's chicken sandwiches again.
Yeah, I said it on Twitter, but remember, Popeye's literally told the entire country it's going to be 5 weeks for spicy. I could not love them more.
My man, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. I do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Spencer Hall for joining us here. Also, be sure to check out the latest Woj Pod episode. He chats with Ramona Shelburne about her 30 for 30 podcast, The Sterling Affairs. Also, subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. We're back on normal schedule, so we'll talk to you guys next week. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.